Okay, if you go over in your Bibles to Acts chapter 24. Acts chapter 24, and we'll begin in verse 1. And it says, after 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. And when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence. He's talking to the governor, by the way. He's speaking to the Roman governor. We accepted always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness, notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of thy clemency a few words. For we have found this man, speaking of Paul, a pestilent fellow, a mover of sedition among the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also hath gone about to profane the temple, who we took and would have judged according to our law, but the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us and with great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. Now that's a mouthful, and so let me just kind of take a little time here to explain what's happening and maybe have a few comments on some things that might go unnoticed. First of all, Paul, as you know, has been taken to Caesarea, and he remains in the custody of the Roman authorities there. The governor of that province has been informed of the situation and is very aware that the Jews there at Jerusalem have made accusations against Paul. They're saying that he's a troublemaker, that he's a blasphemer, and so he has held Paul in the judgment hall, kind of detained him, kept him in custody, awaiting for the arrival of Paul's accusers. Now, after 5 days, as we just read there in verse 1, they've arrived. And they're led by the high priest, and they have with them, it says an orator, but it's really speaking of, he would have been like an attorney, okay? His name is Tertullus. He's the spokesperson, and he would have been an attorney that would be attorney-type person, let's put it that way, that would have been well-versed in Roman law and understanding how to deal with that situation, as opposed to the legal professionals of Jewish law. So it was kind of like a hired attorney, okay? And the verses that we've just read are an account of the indictment that he makes against Paul. And the fact that the high priest has come along with elders, and they've come all the way. Remember, it's a 65-mile trek. They've come all the way to Caesarea in 5 short days. That kind of speaks of the urgency that the Jews have regarding the situation with Paul. First of all, elders is referring to somebody that would have been a member of the Sanhedrin. Okay, so you have the high priest, members of the Sanhedrin, travel in a 5-day period, 65 miles, to come and bring an indictment against the apostle. By the way, they also, again, as we said, brought a lawyer with them. And so why is it so such a big deal? I mean, they're worked up over this. It's not a trivial issue with the Jews. Getting Paul out of Jerusalem was not enough. They are after his life. They want blood. They're really, Paul is the leader of the church at this point, as we know. And they're really sick of Christianity. They're really tired of hearing about this resurrected Christ that these Christians believe in. And they're acting very swiftly to try to get Paul murdered. One thing, they were probably, I'm sure, glad to make accusation, but they have to do it quickly because possibly that governor there, the Roman governor, not having sufficient evidence to hold Paul, might not have continued to hold him for many more days. And so they've hustled down there, and verse 2 tells us that Paul is brought before the governor, and now Tertullus has made his case, and he begins, as we read there in verse 2 and 3 and on into verse 4, he begins with a lot of flowery, flattering words towards the governor, which would have been customary to addressing any kind of an official there, just kind of a lot of pomp, if you will. And of course, there was nothing about it that was sincere or accurate. The truth of the matter is Felix is a miserable, corrupt, former slave turned politician that really owes his position of governor to the fact that his brother is in good with the emperor, Claudius. History tells all of this, okay? And so he's really a corrupt leader, this governor is. And he was a brutal man. His methods in dealing with people in the past have been very extreme and brutal. And he is, in fact, hated by the Jews. So all of this stuff that Tertullus, the attorney, has been hired to say means nothing. He's brought the indictment against Paul, and he's brought the hot air to Felix, okay? He's just blowing hot air. Now let's see what his accusations consist of. First of all, in verse 5, he says, "For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, a mover of sedition among the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes." First of all, he says this man, Paul, is a pest everywhere he goes. And one thing that the Romans did, they dealt firmly with anybody that disturbed the peace. That's just the way it was in the Roman Empire. They had all of these little nations that fell under their empire, that Israel being one of them, and they would like to just kind of let them rule over themselves and kind of keep their communities in order. But if somebody began to raise thunder and create disturbances, then they stepped in. They acted very swiftly on these sort of things. They had no patience for any person or any group that brought trouble to the empire. And so the Jews' attorney here in verse 5 has accused Paul of sedition. And so this is a charge that really is not a crime against the Jews, but rather it is a violation of Roman law. Sedition simply means controversy, or creating an uproar or an uprising, okay? And so the implication here is that Paul, wherever he has gone, if you notice the verbiage there in verse 5, they're saying wherever he's gone, he's moved people against Rome. Well, that's a lie. It's an outright lie. In all the studies we've done over Paul's missionary journeys, we've not one time seen him say anything negative about Rome. This is lies. But this is accusation being made by the Jews' attorney, Tertullus, okay? It's notable that he doesn't name any particular instances. First of all, there were no instances for him to name. Secondly, he would be at risk if he named some place, some instance where Paul had created trouble in the empire, then the governor, Felix, would have Paul transferred to that place, which would have jurisdiction to rule over that particular case. And so Paul would have to be moved. They didn't want that at all. So basically, they just make the accusation in a general sense and give no specifics. What we do know is Paul had, in fact, been in several riots. We all know that, riotous situations. But in every single instance, it was Paul that was the victim of the riot rather than Paul being the instigator of the riot. So the whole charge that's being brought against Paul here is bogus. It's exaggerated, okay? And so now there's a second charge. They've charged him with sedition, and then the second charge comes in verse 5, towards the end of the verse. It says that he is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. Now, the Nazarenes, that was a title that had been given to followers of Christ, Christians. And the reason being is because Jesus was from Nazareth. So they adopted that, one of many. Really, it was a term. It was not a term of endearment either. It was a term used with disdain. The Nazarenes, okay, the Christ followers. And so what they're doing, they're saying that Paul is the ringleader of a group of Jesus followers. And by saying that, that is an accusation of heresy. Okay, simply saying that Paul is against the beliefs of the Jews and he's teaching people against the beliefs of the Jews. And so that is one of their accusations. That would be something that the Romans have no concern about. That's a charge that related to the Jews. But if it's a Jewish problem, then it becomes a Roman problem if there is some kind of uprising over it. Okay, so trouble in Israel means trouble in the Roman Empire, and so it becomes a problem of the Romans when there begins to be some sort of a riotous situation. Okay, so now we've got sedition, we've got heresy, and now the third charge is found in verse 6. It says, "Who also hath gone about to profane the temple?" Now, this charge goes all the way back to Acts chapter 21. The original charge that led Paul to get arrested in the very first time back in chapter 21. They claim that Paul had tried to desecrate the temple by bringing one of his friends, which was a Gentile, into the temple. Paul didn't do that. There's no evidence to say that he did that. They can't prove that because it didn't happen. But they make the claim nonetheless. Now, so you have the three. You have the blasphemy or desecration of the temple. You have sedition. You have heresy. They're saying all three of these things against Paul. None of them have any merit. So now I want you to notice, and we'll wind it up, how badly this attorney begins to twist the facts. We begin in verse 6, in the latter part of the verse, it says, well, let's start in the first. He says, "Who hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took," he's speaking of, he's representing the Jews, "whom the Jews took," he's saying, "and would have judged according to our law," Jewish law. "But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us and with great violence took him out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him." So first of all, when this first began, and all of this goes back again, starting in chapter 21 when Paul came to Jerusalem, there was no attempt ever by the Jews to give Paul due process. There was no effort to convene a court. There was no effort to judge him, as they say here in verse 6, according to Jewish law. That's all lies. The Jews ran upon Paul, if you'll remember, and basically assaulted him when he was teaching and was close to the temple. They ran upon him and assaulted him, and the Romans intervened and pulled Paul from that riotous situation and then just held him in custody. Then the Romans called for a meeting of the Jewish court. The Jews never called for a meeting at all, which is what he's saying they did, which is a lie, okay? And so the Romans called for the Jewish court and was attempting to have some sort of hearing. That quickly got out of hand, if you'll remember, in chapter 22. The Sadducees and the Pharisees started going at each other. And so once again, the Roman police had to extract Paul from that fray for his own safety and took him into custody again. So all of the things that's being said here are entirely inaccurate. Ultimately, we know that the Romans led Paul with 470 guards to Caesarea, and that's where he stands now. But nowhere, no how, at any time did the Romans take Paul by violence. And that's what he says in verse 7, that Lysias came upon us and by great violence took Paul away out of our hands. never happened, as you guys well know. You've studied this along with me, okay? The Romans had actually pulled Paul from the violence of the Jews. And the Jews never had any intention of giving Paul an appropriate hearing. And they never had intentions of judging him according to their law. As they say, they were out to kill Paul. And so this whole testimony by the Jews' attorney, Tertullus, is fabricated. And I want you to see, and then we're done, in verse 9, I want you to see how the so-called religious Jews respond to their attorney's lies. Remember, there is the Sanhedrin, there's the high priest and members of the Sanhedrin there, the religious hierarchy, if you will, of the Jews, and then whoever else decided to follow that hates Paul. They've made this 65-mile trek just to bring these accusations, and we've just read all the accusations. Now watch verse 9. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. So Paul doesn't have a chance. This guy stood up there and he lied under oath, so to speak, on the stand and told all of these lies. And then every one of those religious Jews, supposed to be people of truth, supposed to be godly people, have assented to it and said, yeah, what he's saying is true. It's all, of course, a part of their plan to try to just have Paul convicted and ultimately executed. And it's not going to be done. So, I appreciate you. I know that's a little bit boring and a lot of material there in a short period of time, but we'll keep moving forward. We'll see what happens in the latter part of chapter 24 next week when we come together, okay? Appreciate you guys very much. I don't know whether you noticed the paint, but the paint is, the whole thing's painted and finished. Next step is we're going to be putting the rock up on the wall beginning next week. It's going to look good. The veneer rock and working on getting the chairs and the carpet and all that lined up too. So that's exciting. Let's go ahead and stand. Appreciate you guys.